Welcome. This is the business meeting of the Judicial Council of California for February 26, 2013. This is the continuation of our two-day council session. The meeting is now in session. As you can see, staff from the AOC was able to put together an ability for us to continue to have our meeting and have it publicly broadcast on our website with these microphones that are in front of you. That means that the traditional microphone attached to the boardroom interface here doesn't work, so you have to speak into your microphone. Also understand that for coughing, sneezing, or any of those, there is no cough button that works to mute these. I remind council members that our meetings are audio cast live with real-time captioning on the California Courts website. And for the benefit of council member Angela Davis, who I believe is online and will be joining us, and the online audience, please speak into your microphones and address each other by name so that listeners and real-time followers can follow the discussion. Portions of these meetings also are routinely videotaped for later broadcast and viewing on the California Courts website. Before we begin our regular agenda, I have a few brief comments. With our two legislative members confirmed to council now, the council now has its full complement of constitutionally mandated members. I'm glad that Senator Noreen Evans will remain as the Senate's representative. As you know, Senator Evans has done much to advance the cause of justice and to raise awareness among our sister branches of government of the issues facing the judicial branch. I'm also pleased to welcome, as I know you all will be, Assemblymember Richard Bloom to the council. I look forward to collaborating with him on issues relevant to our branch and the people of California. The Senate constitutional amendment that created this judicial council back in 1926 was overwhelmingly approved by voters by a margin of vote of more than 2-1. The ballot measure outlined a number of duties for the council, and because of our new membership, I'd like to just mention a few of those duties now. That is, council has the duty of seeing that justice is being properly administered. And, the duty of council is to propose a remedy for any complaint brought by any judge or lawyer or litigant or public citizen. The purpose of the measure was stated as to, quote, to organize the courts of the state on a business basis, end quote. We are, as you know, a policymaking body, a deliberative body. We've been referred to sort of as a board of directors. Our mission statement reads, quote, under the leadership of the Chief Justice and in accordance with the California Constitution, the Judicial Council is responsible for ensuring the consistent, independent, impartial, and accessible administration of justice. Later this year, we'll meet to discuss our strategic planning process, and very soon, in a few months, we'll have a report from the Trial Court Funding Workgroup. Our ongoing self-assessment will continue, but we must also look to the future of our branch and for the people of California that we all serve. With that in mind, the first item on our agenda this morning is approval of our minutes. Those are found in your notebooks. We're approving the December 13 and 14 meeting minutes, and I believe also the January minutes. Do I hear a move for adoption?
Make motion.
Thank you.
Second.
Mr. Jacobson, seconded by Judge Herman. Any discussion on the minutes? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Minutes pass. Next on our agenda is the Chief Justice's report. That's my regular report to council about engagements and meetings and ongoing outreach since our last meeting, January 17. And although it's been only 24 business days since our business meeting, it's proved to be a very busy and productive, and I have to say, personally rewarding month of activities for me as chair of the Judicial Council and as a Chief Justice. The cautious optimism I mentioned at our last meeting has been amplified by my meetings with court representatives, justice system partners at the state level, the national level, and particularly by my meetings recently with high school and law school students at a number of education and civics learning outreach events here in February. I will say, however, that my cautious optimism has also been tempered by a very informative meeting with the Los Angeles Superior Court. Justice Miller and I toured the mental health, children's, and criminal courts, as well as visited the self-help center at the Stanley Moss Courthouse. We witnessed tremendous work being done by court staff under what I would say, by my observation, incredibly difficult circumstances. We also had a very sobering briefing from court leadership on one of our branch's ongoing challenge, and that is the budget. I thank Presiding Judge David Wesley and Assistant Presiding Judge Carolyn Kuehl for devoting the day to our tour. I also attended the Governor's State of the State Address, where he shared his optimism for our state and his focus on addressing the ongoing budget issues. I met with our branch leadership, that is, the Administrative Presiding Justices, the Presiding Judges and Court Executives Advisory Committee, and the Conference of Court Executives. And again, budget was a major topic. But so, too, were the actions and efficiencies that are taking place around the state by innovative courts. Again, points made during all of those meetings were also made in a public and videotaped conversation with Mark Baldessare at the Public Policy Institute of California. Our ongoing liaison meetings with justice system partners have continued, and I met, along with others, with the Consumer Attorneys of California, the California Defense Council, and the Criminal Defense Bar. The focus and intent of all of these meetings remains the same, and that is improving access to justice. With this goal in mind, I was also pleased to attend the Napa Valley's Legal Aid Pro Bono Recognition event, where local attorneys and volunteers were honored. At a national level, I visited the National Association for Court Management Conference in Los Angeles, which had a significant California delegation. California is quite a leader in the Conference of Court Managers. And I also attended the Conference of Chief Justices meeting, where, among other engagements, I was pleased to be a panelist on a discussion about how we can strengthen our justice system. And I chose for my topic California's collaborative courts and the wonderful work being done by all the trial courts across the state in various efforts to meet the needs in their community. February became and continues to be Education Outreach and Civics Learning Month. The Supreme Court held a special oral argument at the University of San Francisco School of Law to commemorate their centennial. The session was attended not only by law students, but also high school students from Balboa High School, Thurgood Marshall High School, here in San Francisco. I also visited Sutter Middle School in Sacramento and with Justice Miller, the Laverne College of Law in Ontario. Students from Sacramento's C.K. McClatchy High School, my alma mater, and their Law and Public Policy Academy visited a Supreme Court oral argument session here in San Francisco, and I had the opportunity to return the visit to both Balboa High School and McClatchy High School and their law academies. You know, I was impressed by the students. I was impressed by the teachers. I was impressed by the legal community that supports those academies. I think that the learning model there offers students a whole new vista of opportunities and ways to view the world. Civics education strengthens our democracy, and it also offers the students a pathway to a profession rather than what we know is the pipeline to prison that's mapped out when students become disengaged and suffer suspensions and expulsions. Also, I want to point out that this Thursday, the last February of this month, I look forward to our Civics Outreach Summit and hearing from retired Justice Sandra Day O'Connor, who has agreed to be our guest to speak at that event on Thursday. I also had the pleasure of presenting the AOC Service Awards to the great, dedicated AOC staff who have reached service milestones. And finally, it was a great pleasure, especially in these difficult times, to meet with the newly appointed judges during their NJO orientation. I hope to have many more of those meetings and to see those folks get involved in the administration of justice once they get their feet on the ground in terms of courtroom work. That concludes my report to council. We will now proceed with reports from our other chairs, starting with director's report, Judge Jarr.
Thank you, Chief, and good morning, council members. The written report that you have before you in the binder sets out the activities of the administrative office as well as advisory committees since we last met in January. As a highlight, I'd like to observe that we had, I think, a very useful and successful hearing convened by the Assembly Judiciary Committee on February 12th, in advance of which I met with Chair Wieckowski and Vice Chair Wagner. The hearing was set to assess the justice crisis, particularly as it relates to family courts on account of the budget problems with which we are all too familiar. Judge Slough, the presiding judge of San Bernardino, Judge Earl, both as her court's PJ in Sacramento and as chair of our presiding judge's standing advisory committee, gave evidence, as did Jack Clark, the executive officer of Los Angeles, and I spoke as well, along with members of the Open Court Coalition, the public bar, the interpreters, reporters, representatives of county and city governments. And while this disparate group, of course, only met when we walked into the hearing room, the message was startlingly unified, and that is essentially that the general fund reductions to supporting the judicial branch have been so severe that the impacts have been material and obviously extraordinarily negative, especially as it relates to children and families. The leadoff witness, in fact, was Treasurer Lockyer, who everyone knows was at the time of the Trial Court Funding Act of 1997 in the center of that reform issue, and in fact his name appears on the act itself. He urged that we not speak with divided voices, and he also indicated that when you take one-third of general fund support away from an institution, you can expect that you're going to have serious crisis. He urged as a principal solution the reinvestment of general fund dollars in the branch, which certainly was a message that we carried forward, and it was most fortunate that he began the hearings on that note. The hearings actually lasted four and a half hours. Most all the committee members remained for virtually the entire hearing. They were engaged, and I think very, very definitely concerned and aware. There was very little in the way of dissension, if any at all. It appeared to me that all the committee members were firmly aware that the message has certainly penetrated, that the judicial branch is in a state of fiscal crisis and is having actual on-the-ground impacts on the users and customers of the courts, which, as we've discussed at previous times, is really the way by which we can most effectively illustrate the problem so that we can begin to work on solutions. Especially vivid were testimonials relative to the impacts of court closures or planned court closures in different locations, particularly jurisdictions like San Bernardino, which are geographically massive and essentially result in the withdrawal of a justice system from whole communities. There wasn't anything that came forward in the hearings that indicated to me, in other words, that there was any real serious controversy about the fact of the problem. It also appeared to me that we have a welcoming institution in the legislature insofar as the proposal of solutions are concerned. We don't have the barrier of demonstrating that indeed this problem exists. Following the hearing, obviously, the Office of Governmental Affairs has continued with coordinating our action plan of outreach through the Bench Bar Coalition, through active advocacy of its own, with continued coordination with the Open Courts Coalition attorneys. The chief, as she mentioned, has conducted liaison meetings with the Criminal Defense Bar, the district attorneys, the plaintiffs of personal injury and civil bar, and the defense bar on the civil side as well, all of which, among other elements, have discussed the huge impacts of our budget issues on their clients and their particular areas of practice. Now I think we are in a position where we can move forward with the executive and legislative branches, as we discussed yesterday, with the important reform work that's ongoing right now relative to the development of an allocation methodology so that we can deliver on expectations that the legislature and the governor have set out for us. A number of additional materials are in the report, which I will leave to you for your reading. I should mention to you that these compilations that appear in what's called the Administrative Director's Report are really handy summaries for your use in the event that you have questions from constituent judges or others about, well, what kind of direct services has the administrative office provided to courts this last period of time since the preceding council meetings? What kind of activity has been ongoing with all the advisory committees, task forces, and working groups? It's a helpful one-stop place to go for that kind of information, and I certainly commend it to you for your review and consideration. A few other highlights. Our OGA staff has now met with all 39 new legislators and staff to discuss the role of the council's legislative advocacy, judicial branch policy, and budget issues. As I mentioned, OGA is coordinating outreach efforts through the Benchmark Coalition, ably co-chaired by our own Judge O'Malley. And the Benchmark members have been invited to serve as legislative liaisons to new legislators as well as to members of the executive branch. Those members have also signed up for day-in-the-district visits to legislators in their home offices, and OGA is also coordinating the coalition's day in Sacramento in conjunction with the chief's State of the Judiciary Address, which is now scheduled for March 11th. The BBC on that date will spend the day visiting with legislators and key fiscal and policy committee members. Previous Friday, February 22nd, was the deadline for the introduction of new bills for the 13-14 legislative session. We're now in the process of analyzing legislation that's been put in. OGA has seen to it that legislative authors have been identified for an array of efficiency reforms which are proposed for consideration and will be reviewed further in detail by the policy committee under Justice Baxter's supervision early in March. The Department of Finance has agreed to carry in trailer bill language a series of 10 of those efficiencies directly. I'd like again to commend and congratulate Corey and Teresa for their stellar work as our new leadership team at OGA. They've assumed a seamless transition, and we're fortunate to have them as our advocates in the Capitol. I'll be speaking with you later during the meeting about three particular AOC restructuring initiatives, which are before you as action items regarding a classification compensation study, the remote work or telecommuting policy, and also the review of the use, selection, and management of outside counsel in our litigation program. I'll defer further discussion on that, obviously, to those points in time. I do thank the division chiefs as well as the AOC directors and their management staff and employees for their continued devotion to succeeding in the restructuring process. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you, Judge Jarr. Next, we'll hear from the committee chairs in the Judicial Council, starting with Justice Baxter for PCLC.
Thank you, Chief, and good morning, members of the council. The policy committee met twice since the last report gave at the December council meeting. At the January 10th meeting, the policy committee, at the direction of the council at its December 14th meeting, reconsidered and revised its prior recommendation to seek sponsorship of the third set of 50 judgeships and funding of the already authorized second set of 50 judgeships as one of its key legislative priorities for 2013, recommending instead to defer council sponsorship of new judgeships for 1 year. And as you know, the policy committee's recommendation on this issue was presented and approved by the council at its January 17th meeting. The committee also rescinded its November 29, 2012 recommendation that the Judicial Council sponsor a legislative proposal to accompany a rule of court proposal adopted by the council in January of 2013, which would establish a pilot project authorizing trial courts to conduct remote video trials in cases involving violations of traffic and compulsory education laws. The policy committee determined that a legislative proposal, in addition to the rule of court, was not required. Further, the committee determined that a legislative proposal would be more appropriate after completion of the pilot authorized by the newly adopted rule of court, when the branch could evaluate how the lessons learned from the pilot should be incorporated into existing statutes. On February 14th, one piece of legislation was approved for council sponsorship. That legislation dealt with modernization and improvement of statutes on trial court records management and retention. The committee heard a presentation by Bench Bar Coalition co-chairs, Judge Marianne O'Malley and Raymond Aragon, on Bench Bar Coalition objectives for the upcoming legislative year. I might add that as to the sponsorship of the modernization and improvement of statutes on trial court records management, we had the privilege of hearing from Alan Carlson and also Kim Turner, who joined us on that call in support of the action taken. The legislative deadline to introduce bills was Friday, February 22nd. The Office of Governmental Affairs staff is reviewing all bills introduced by legislators, including, I might add, CJA's bill. I understand that bill did find an author, and it has been introduced, so OGA will be vetting that bill as well as all of the others to identify those of interest to and with impact upon the judicial branch. The Office of Governmental Affairs has secured legislative sponsors and introduction of several bills which encompass the Council's legislative priorities. So in future reports, I'll keep you informed of the progress of the Council-sponsored legislation and all bills of interest. That completes my report, Chief.
Thank you, Justice Baxter. Next, we'll hear from Executive and Planning Committee, Justice Miller.
Thank you, Chief. The Executive and Planning Committee has met seven times since the Council's December meeting, by email, by telephone, and in person. In the course of those meetings, the committee set the agenda for the February 25th, 26th, 2013 Judicial Council meeting. As part of the agenda setting, the committee consulted with Judicial Council members who served on the Strategic Evaluation Committee to receive their assessment of the readiness of reports on the implementation of Judicial Council directives regarding AOC restructuring. As indicated by Judge Jarre, those reports include Item O on the issue of vendor options for conducting an AOC classification and compensation study, Item P on proposed amendments to the AOC policy on working remotely, Item Q on an independent review of the use, selection, and management of outside counsel, and then Information 1 is the status report on the implementation of the Judicial Council directives on AOC restructuring. I think it's interesting to note, too, that there are two items on the consent agenda that deal directly with the impacts of the budget. So just as a matter of mentioning those, on the consent agenda, Item C, which is temporary suspension of case management rules, and Item G, which is the application to establish remote video proceedings for a pilot project in Fresno. Also, on behalf of the Council, the committee acted on one request from the Superior Court of California, County of Riverside, to confirm the conversion of a subordinate judicial officer position to a judgeship. E&P joined RUPRO and the Council's Technology Committee for a two-day meeting in January to review our current structure of existing Judicial Council advisory bodies, including advisory committees, task forces, working groups, and subcommittees. This is part of a Council initiative to evaluate the opportunities for consolidating committee activities, strengthening Council oversight, and reducing the costs associated with committee operations. This is one of the governance initiatives that the Council members identified at its June 2011 planning meeting, and which E&P formally recommended to the Judicial Council at the August 2011 meeting. The Judicial Council addressed many of these 2011 governance issues immediately, opening educational meetings to the public, relaxing the Council's rule about public comment at meetings, and creating liaison programs where Council members establish connections with the courts and offices at the AOC. Some of these initiatives, like the review of advisory bodies, take considerable effort of many Council members as well as their advisory groups. This initiative was launched in November of 2012. The goal of all these governance initiatives is to improve the council's oversight and accountability for the AOC and to have greater information in order to better set priorities and directions for the judicial branch. The Judicial Council Advisory Group review has been a multi-step process. In December 2012, E&P and RuPro members developed preliminary recommendations for dozens of the council advisory groups. In late December, these preliminary recommendations were provided to the chairs of the council's standing advisory committees and task forces. These groups were already scheduled to have their annual meetings with either E&P or RuPro members to discuss their annual agendas. In other words, their work plans for the coming year. All council members in this process, therefore, received and will consider the big picture regarding the council's advisory groups, and more advisory groups were added this year to these combined, comprehensive annual agenda meetings. All invited chairs were able to discuss the preliminary recommendations with the council members. At the two-day meetings in January, E&P, RuPro, and the Technology Committee members were extremely impressed with the committed and passionate volunteer judges and attorneys from around the state who give their time and expertise for the benefit of the branch and the improvement of the administration of justice. We discussed with each advisory group chair the group's function, purpose, projects, resource needs, and our preliminary recommendation. Next month, E&P, RuPro, and the Technology Committee members will again meet with the information we have gathered from the committee chairs. We plan to develop our recommendations to the Judicial Council, likely to come at its April meeting, regarding reorganization and improved governance for the advisory groups. We will also have proposals on how an advisory group creates a subgroup, how it obtains staff and resources for its projects, and how changes in its number of members may be made. The written report on the 145 Judicial Council directives on AOC restructuring appears in Information Item 1 of the meeting agenda for today and includes the status report for all 145 directives and the activity reporting and proposal forms containing detailed information on the progress and accomplishment of specific directives for Council. This is the third report on the AOC implementation effort since the Council approved the directives on August 31, 2012. The last report was provided at the December Council meeting. Three restructuring directives appear on the Council's agenda for today, as I had previously indicated. It should be noted that this meeting's discussion of vendor options for the classification and compensation study is preliminary to the process for completing the study. There are several directives tied to the completion of the classification and compensation study that include a timeline report to the Council at this meeting. These will remain outstanding until the classification and compensation study can be completed and the Council makes the expected decisions on those results. In addition to the restructuring that occurred on October 2012, the Administrative Director has reported that based on comments received by the Council at the October 2012 Council meeting, effective February 1, 2013, the AOC's Internal Audit Services Unit reporting structure has been changed, and this unit now reports directly to the Chief of Staff in the Judicial Council and Court Leadership Services Division. This restructuring occurred to ensure appropriate separation of the oversight of audit functions from the other two AOC divisions that may potentially have activities subject to audits. In the interest of time, it's not possible to review the details of each of the 33 activity reporting and proposal forms in the implementation report. However, there are several activities of note to highlight since December. These relate to functions performed by the Fiscal Services Office, the Center for Family, Children, and the Courts, the Legal Services Office, and the Center for Judicial Education and Research. And I just want to mention a couple. In response to two directives, Directive 53 and 72.1, regarding the consolidation of research efforts specifically between the Center for Families, Children, and the Courts and the Court Operations and Special Services Office, the Administrative Director reported that the number of AOC employees in formal research classification has declined and to improve the efficiencies and effectiveness of research. All research analysts currently at the AOC have been consolidated within one division. Additionally, a formal protocol for managing workforce reductions and staffing current and future research projects is being prepared for the April Council meeting. The Administrative Director reported that CFCC has implemented Directive 56, which improves and involves an effort by CFCC to reduce to an absolute minimum staff and funds used on print publications by making this information available through the website and other electronic means. In response to Directive 59 relating to a proposal for an organizational plan for CFCC that, quote, allows for reasonable servicing of the diverse programs mandated by statute and assigned to this division, end of quote, the Administrative Director provided a new organizational plan for CFCC that refocuses on mandates and core services in six areas: family, juvenile, collaborative justice, mental health, self-help, access to justice, family violence, and tribal and state court programs. And again, there are a number of others that I recommend that you review: Directive 72.2, 86, 108, 115, and review all of the efforts that have been undertaken in that regards. And then, Chief, at the end of the comments and reports by the different internal chairs, we have three reports from council members who have made liaison visits: Judge Lori Earle, Justice Judith Ashman Gerst, and Judge Alan Hardcastle, and they'll be ready to make those reports.
Thank you. Please proceed on those reports, Judge Earle.
Thank you. On February 1st, I traveled to the Yolo County Superior Court and met with Presiding Judge Steve Basha and their judicial officers. There are, I believe they have 12 judicial officers, if my math is correct, and most of them were at our lunch hour meeting. They were interested particularly in hearing updates and talking about things like the budget, of course, and the I found they were interested in learning about the trial court fund working group and the funding methodology subcommittee of the trial court budget working group, and I find sometimes that folks have difficulty distinguishing the difference. So we talked about the makeup of each of those working groups and the charge of each of those working groups, and specifically what the subcommittee of the trial court budget working group was working on. They were also interested in the proposal by Fresno to allow for remote video proceedings in traffic cases. They have a new courthouse project that is in the works, and we talked about that, and I was able to view the photos that their presiding judge so proudly displayed. They had two suggestions that they asked that I bring back to the council that I want to share with you. One was they recommend that AOC staff members of working groups or advisory committees that interrelate most directly with the trial courts consider visiting trial courts and learning more about the operational aspect of the things that trial courts do. They thought that would be helpful education for AOC staff and also helpful for them to have access to them when they make those visits. They also asked, in light of the fact with reduced resources and reduced support staff, they find it difficult sometimes to take advantage of the training opportunities that exist in other parts of their county. So they asked that CJR consider not only videotaping all of the trainings, but then uploading them all on Serranus, but also perhaps doing lectures over the lunch hour that perhaps are transmitted via Skype or some other video conferencing. They are just finding it difficult, I think, as most of us are, getting away from our court and taking advantage of that training, which they think is very important and would like to see other means that it's delivered to them. So that is my report.
Thank you, Judge Earle. Justice Ashman Gerst.
On February 7th, I stopped by both the Bishop and the Independence courthouses in Inyo, and then had a lengthy discussion with Judge Stout on February 20th. And I'd really like to kind of focus on the good things about this branch that sometimes we overlook, and how lucky we are to have people like Judge Stout working with us. While he lives in Bishop, he contributes an absolutely amazing amount of time to this branch. He co-chairs the Family and Juvenile Advisory Committee. He's on the Domestic Violence Task Force, the Blue Ribbon Commission for Child and Foster Care, the Tribal Courts Committee, the Trial Court Budget Working Group, and the PJ's Advisory Committee. And I'm sure I've missed a couple of committees that he works with. And, of course, the Center for Family and Children Services is where his heart is. And, you know, it's no small feat considering that he does live in Bishop. He says that during the winter, getting to a meeting in San Francisco can sometimes be a three-day event. If he's lucky during the winter, he might be able to get a flight to San Francisco or into LAX and then transfer to San Francisco. But that's only if there's not a storm in Mammoth. In the summer, it's easier. He can come over Tioga Pass, and that only takes about 7 hours. So I just want to let him know how much we appreciate his time and, of course, Tammy's time on behalf of the people of and the courts of this state. Moving on to the issue of facilities, which I'm not going to focus on too much because I know that Judge Moss talked about facilities in Inyo. But calendaring is a complicated issue for them because of actually a limited number of lawyers in the area. So he and Judge Lamb have to do a juggling act between Bishop and Independence. Matters made more difficult as there's only one courtroom in Bishop. So, and keep in mind that Inyo County is geographically is the second largest county in the state and the third largest in the nation, he tells me. Independence is where the jail and the juvenile detention center are located, so those cases can only be heard in Independence. Obviously, their goal would be to have adequate court facilities in both Bishop and in Independence. And by the way, there's no ADA compliance at all in Independence. There's no elevator access to the second floor there. Like many courts, they had budgeted and saved about $1.5 million in their reserves. That plus the construction money would have allowed the construction of a modular unit adjacent to the county jail in Independence. That could then have connected to the jail, which would have saved a lot of time and money. With the expected budget, he thinks he may lose 37% of his court staff, as they only have 21 employees now. Doing the math, the result would be devastating. So they're trying to rescope the Independence project. They'd like to have a courtroom large enough to do criminal cases and one large enough to pick a jury. With the budget cuts, they, as other small courts, have become much more independent on the AOC. And they are impressed with the quality of the services. This is the same comment I brought back from Ventura and also from Mammoth. Specifically, Judge Stout feels that the Office of Legal Counsel and HR are exceedingly invaluable. There's one comment about seizure, which is interesting considering what Judge Earl just talked about. He thinks seizure does a wonderful job, but his regret is that the Cal County Institute has had to go from being every year to every 2 years. He said that had really become one-stop shopping for them. Since he and most of the judges in small courts are generalists, they've got to stay proficient in all case types. And he really felt that Cal County's Institute was extremely helpful. On top of everything else, as was mentioned yesterday by some people, they're having some systemic problems on the criminal side, similar to what was happening in Riverside. So as a result, they're experiencing a surge in the number of jury trials because settlements have become more difficult. And so he comments that the assigned judges unit has been invaluable to them. He and Judge Lamb can keep the calendars moving and they can stay involved in the cases, but an assigned judge is called in to handle the jury trials, and that's a lifesaver. And just another topic I wanted to just mention, again, the positive aspects of what we do. We really have to recognize this court's creativity when it comes to the area of family issues. You know, as many of you know, in the medical field, they're revamping their focus, trying to become more preventative, follow a patient, before hospitalization, then following through with aftercare and social workers and all. Judge Stout's doing something similar with family issues. He's trying to adhere to the concept of one family, one judge. He understands the need for the judge to know the family dynamic, whether it's dependency, delinquency, or dissolution. Moreover, you know, he and Judge Lamb are really sensitive to the geographic problems. They try to keep the commute times for litigants down to a minimum. And they set delinquency cases in the late afternoon so they can reduce the absences from school for kids that are still in school. Finally, he would like to commend the new culture and the transparency of the chief and the judicial council. He says, please, let's not forget valuable programs, though, and services that have benefited the citizens of the state. And I just want to thank you, Chief, and Justice Miller for establishing this liaison program. I think it's been eye-opening visiting the courts around the state, and I hope everyone gets the opportunity to do it in the near future. Thank you.
Thank you, Justice Ashmanhurst. Judge Hardcastle.
Thank you. Good morning, Chief, members of the council. On February 8th, I was fortunate enough to go up to Ukiah and visit Mendocino County, a county where I had practiced, and was reminded that small counties don't mean small cases. And in fact, in my 18 years of practice, the most complex civil case I touched was venued in Mendocino County. It took a long, protracted period of time, settled for millions of dollars, and had it been tried up there, would have tied up a courtroom for probably a year. So small counties just don't mean small cases. I was able to meet with almost all of their clerical staff and with the eight sitting judges. And again, they are very enthusiastic and about having someone from the Judicial Council come and see their court and visit it. Their building is architecturally challenged. It's a five-story building, and the elevator only stops at the odd-numbered floors. So that, and that two of their high-volume calendars, small claims and traffic, are on the second floor, and there's no elevator access. So if you're not able-bodied, you don't have a case in Mendocino County. It is a real challenge. And they, of course, are on the list for projects. They would, their one request about the AOC is they'd like them to be more proactive in helping them obtain the site, because they've got about four sites, and one is a first choice that they'd like to have, but there are other people that like to have it because it's right in downtown Ukiah, so they'd like some help with that regard. Also, they're within custody defendants, they can only bring six at a time because they have to bring them in a van, offload them in the street, and parade them past the jury assembly room, and then put them on an elevator to bring them up to the courtrooms. And then they take the six back. They have to wait. They're offloaded. Bring another six, and in they come. And of course, like all small counties, they have a variety of cases. And you're all going to think I like cow in the road cases, but Judge Henderson had a cow in the road case, and he handled that. And his very next case was a setting a prelim for a premeditated murder case. So they do have a variety of cases. Unfortunately, because of the budget cuts, they do not have a research attorney, a probate assistant, a guardianship investigator, an auditor, a human resources manager, an assistant court executive officer, or a jury services coordinator, and the judges do not have a legal secretary. They prepare all their own stationery, make all their letters, make their own appointments, and handle all of those things. One very peculiar problem for Mendocino County is health insurance. They are part of a very small pool. They can only get one carrier because of their geographic location. They're 5 miles outside the range of Santa Rosa's Kaiser. They have had five catastrophic claims, mostly by dependents. Because of that, their insurance premiums now consume 40 to 50% of their paychecks. Karen Downing, the CEO, said if she were to hire, they're not hiring, of course, but if she were to hire a clerk one, and that clerk one paid for dependent coverage and paid fully into his or her retirement, at the end of every 2 weeks, they would receive a paycheck for $0. Everything would go to taxes, retirement, and health insurance. So they would request help from the Judicial Council and the AOC to assist them in perhaps being part of a larger insurance pool. Right now, they're part, incredibly, with some sort of firefighter group out of Los Angeles. which, of course, has some large claims as well. So they would request that assistance. One 20-year employee dropped her health insurance so she could get Medi-Cal. One of the court managers works three jobs. Her court manager job, she works as a waitress in a restaurant and also works at a local winery so that she can pay her health insurance premium. One of her family members was one that had the catastrophic claim. Because of the cutbacks, all staff are covering 2 to 3 desks. And they said, frankly, they're a very tight unit. They feel they're family in Mendocino County. And if they were not, many of them would simply leave. Of course, like everyone else, their self-help centers have been cut, and that leads to the problems with the papers not being prepared completely or properly. The court has one Spanish-speaking interpreter for the entire courthouse, so that person is constantly on the run. And unfortunately, they had to lay off their jury commissioner recently, who had been with the court for nearly 20 years. There is a 10-month lag time on the reimbursement for the 1058 commissioner, so they felt the 1% maximum fund balance would, frankly, send them into receivership. But they are working as hard as they can. They appreciate a face, even if it's mine, from the Judicial Council coming up and seeing them, and look forward to further contact in the future. So, thank you, Chief.
Well, I thank all the presenters on the Judicial Council, not only for going to their liaison courts, but bringing back these really graphic stories. And I cannot tell you how speechless I am to hear the conditions. And these reports don't end here. Steve's been taking notes. I know Jody's nodding her head. I do believe a follow-up call to these courts, not from you, but now that AOC staff knows, the management level knows what's happening in these counties, that we contact them and see if there's anything that we can do to provide life support. I mean, these are stories that need to be told because they aren't heard necessarily or regularly in Sacramento where these kinds of decisions are being made that could remedy this. I'm astounded and saddened, and at the same time, really amazed at the spirit of the folks there who are doing their best, all to serve the public, and clearly not at personal gain.
It is tough to stand in front of these folks, and they're tearful as they're telling me these stories, and they're really devastated up there.
I hope that this part of the Judicial Council reports gets reported far and wide in the media, because it is important that the public know what's going on behind the scenes and that we can take this to the Capitol as well as call back to these communities to help in any way we can. Thank you. And next we'll hear from Justice Hull for Rules and Projects Committee.
Thank you, Chief. Before I give the RuPro report, I just had for Judge Hardcastle just one question on your report, which is saddening at the very least. Do you know whether or not the presiding judge or judicial officers or others have made very plain to their local representatives in the legislature just the effect of the cuts on their court? Did that come up at all?
Yes, it has, and they actually have two very good advocates. In West Chesboro is their assembly member, and Noreen Evans is their senator. So two good friends of the judicial branch, and they have worked very closely with them. Both Mr. Chesboro and Ms. Evans have been there to visit their courthouse.
Thank you. The thought has occurred before, but I personally think that it's very important court by court that as the hardships, such as those that you have described, take on a daily aspect and a personal face, that the courts, not only working with us and the AOC and all of the people who are trying to solve our funding problems, that they are making it plain to their legislators exactly what these funding problems mean day by day by day. So that's good to know. Thank you. Thank you, Chief. As far as the RuPro report, the Rules and Projects Committee has met 4 times since my last report to you on December the 14th. The committee met by phone on December 20th. to consider a proposal that circulated for public comment on a special cycle, the proposal for a pilot project authorizing remote video proceedings in traffic infraction cases, which originated with a request, as we know, from the Superior Court of Fresno County, which, as we also know, has recently been compelled to close several court facilities because of budget reductions. In response to the comments, the proposal, as you will recall, also was modified, including a modification eliminating a rule in forms authorizing a remote video pilot project in compulsory school attendance law proceedings. This item was approved by the council at the January 17th meeting. RUPRO met by phone on January the 9th to consider a request to circulate on an urgent basis a proposal to amend on a temporary basis the civil case management rules to give courts the discretion to exempt certain types of or categories of general civil cases from the mandatory case management rules, including mandatory case management conferences. Cases that are exempted must be specified by local rule, and the proposal, if adopted, would be effective only until January the 1st of the year 2016. This proposal originated with a request from the Superior Court of Los Angeles County, supported by the Superior Court of Sacramento County, seeking relief from the current case management rules applicable to general civil cases during the fiscal crisis that we now face. The Rules and Projects Committee approved circulation of this proposal. On January 22nd and 23rd, RUPRO and the Executive and Planning Committee and the Technology Committee met jointly to review the annual agendas of advisory groups and on other matters which have been detailed this morning by Justice Miller, and which I need not repeat, concerning the organization of committees, task forces, work groups, and the like. Most of the annual agendas, I'll just note, were approved at that meeting, and others will be considered at a meeting of the internal committees on March the 11th. RUPRO finally met by phone on February 13th to consider several proposals, including revisions of criminal jury instructions, the proposal to allow suspension of mandatory case management rules, which I have just referred to, and certain technical amendments. RUPRO recommends approval of these proposals, which are items A, B, and C, and D, on the consent agenda. Chief, that concludes my report. If there are any questions, I'd be pleased to respond to them.
Thank you, Justice Hull. Next, we'll hear from Judge Herman on the Technology Committee.
Thank you, Chief. Thank you, Chief. I just add sort of in response to the report regarding online resources for CJR education, there are significant online resources for court use, including videos and interactive instruction in virtually all areas of judicial education, as well as clerical staff education. So there are additional resources out there, and part of it is just getting the word out to the trial courts that these resources are out there. The JCTC has held three telephonic meetings since the January JC meeting. The January 28th meeting included review of the Kings County Superior Court request for supplemental funding for a case management system, which we'll talk about more in detail later and which is on the discussion agenda later today. Project applications and semi-annual reports for the remote video proceeding pilot project and updates included the status of the Sacramento-hosted case management system request for proposal developed by the trial court technology working group, the TICTA-WGG. The not an easy acronym, the Technology Planning Task Force, the Court Technology Advisory Committee, good, and the streamlining of technology governance, which we're working on along with RUPRO and ENP. The February 5th meeting again reviewed the King's request. The JCTC concluded that the King's application for emergency funding from the branch level 2% fund balance should be approved by the council, and that's again on a discussion item later today. but we also recommended that certain conditions, which we will also discuss. The February 13th meeting reviewed the Fresno court's specific application to proceed with remote video proceedings in traffic cases, and we anticipate that there will be a significant number of courts that are going to be interested in that process to go forward, so we will be reviewing applications as they come in. The JCTC reviewed and approved the Merced court's request for a limited number of hours of AOC staff to support and assist Merced with their Sustained Justice Edition interfaces. And the approval was for about 20 hours of AOC Information Technology Services Organization, ITSO, staff. And we concluded that at that level, there should be staff decision-making in terms of that kind of level to help out the trial courts without going through a JCTC. So we did agree to allow staff discretion up to 50 hours of staff work to help support the trial courts. The Judicial Branch Technology Initiatives Working Group, again, for the past 6 months, the Trial Court Technology Initiatives Working Group, which I'll just refer to after this as the working group, chaired by Judge Moss, has been working on four work streams of importance to the trial courts. The RFP work stream, charged with developing an RFP for trial court case management systems, resulting in the award of vendor master services agreements for use by any trial court. Multiple individuals from 15 courts participated in this effort. The e-filing workstream, charged with developing an e-filing playbook to assist trial courts planning on e-filing systems upgrades. The V2, V3 maintenance and support workstream, charged with developing recommendations for future governance, enhancement, and maintenance of these interim case management systems. And the V2 court and all V3 courts have participated in this effort, and Alan Carlson has led this particular effort. The technology, vision, and roadmap workstream, charged with developing recommendations for the future of branch technology. The workstreams really represent efforts from the trial court CIOs, CEOs, and judges who volunteered to assist the JCTC in answering a number of council directives, including the need to assist and partner with the courts on technology post-CCMS. And these efforts, I might add, have been really at no cost to the branch except for AOC staff efforts. So it's remarkable collaboration and volunteerism from the trial courts. And these recommendations, by the way, will form a part of the basis for the work of the Technology Planning Task Force that I'll talk about later. On March 1st, the TCTIWG will host a WebEx meeting. The working group will host a WebEx meeting to review the final reports and recommendations of the work streams, as well as a report of the Sustained Justice Edition Path Forward Court Consortium. And all trial court presiding judges, court executive officers, and CIOs have been invited to participate, and there's already significant interest in this WebEx. So my congratulations to Judge Moss, who's overall led the effort, to Rob O'Young, who's the CIO from David Yamasaki's court, and thank you, David, for donating Rob's efforts or Rob's services to this effort, and he's also going to be the leading principal in the Technology Planning Task Force. At this point, I'd like to talk a little bit more in detail about the RFP effort in particular. The development of the RFP and the award of master service agreements on February 4th, 2013 to three top vendors was initiated by the California Information Technology Managers Forum, CITMIF. As a joint effort amongst the superior courts to leverage court resources to attain case management systems, and I might say that CITMIF really is an independent group that was grassroots and self-started by the CIOs in the state. The Sacramento and Santa Clara Superior Courts took the lead as sponsors, and thanks to both of those courts and to Judge Earl and Sacramento in particular. Sacramento will host and maintain the master service agreements, and I want to emphasize, because there has been some comment about this, that the courts are all 58 courts are free to conduct their own solicitations, and not connected with the RFP or any resulting MFA. But this effort does give leverage and help and free services, essentially, in terms, or a free leg up in terms of entering into master services agreements with the three vendors that were awarded. And although Sacramento is the hosting court for the RFP, the RFP template was leveraged, I love the way we use leverage, was leveraged from the National Center for State Courts on Case Management Systems template, the San Luis Obispo RFP developed by Information Technology Service Offices, and the CCMS V4 standards. So the ITSO and Sacramento staff provided administrative and logistical support. And so my congratulations again to those working on this collaborative bench-wide effort, especially the Workstream sponsors, Heather Pettit, the CIO of Sacramento, Robert O. Young of Santa Clara, and, of course, to our own information technology staff for the initial RFP efforts and their administrative support of, and logistical support of this effort. The Technology Planning Task Force. Justice Miller's asked me to bring the council up to date on the Technology Planning Task Force, whose members were recently appointed by the chief. So let me start with the background. After the council terminated CCMS last year, the council charged the JCTC with developing, first of all, an approach and vision for implementing technology that serves the trial courts, litigants, attorneys, justice system partners, and the public while considering available resources and technology needs. Second, a judicial branch court technology governance structure that would best serve the implementation of technology solutions otherwise included in the recommendations and strategies to assist trial courts with existing critical need case management systems. The council has made it clear, by the way, that these efforts were to be in partnership and collaboration with the courts. The JCTC has undertaken a number of steps to implement the council's directives, including circulating the need survey, the technology need survey, to all 58 courts, and by the end of August, we'd received detailed responses from 58 responding courts, establishing the working group and supporting its workstream efforts, and hosting the branch technology summit, which was held at the end of October. 70 court representatives were in personal attendance at the summit. There were 68 websites with multiple persons attending the webinar for call-ins, and each side, as I said, hosted multiple attendees. The survey revealed that six courts have indicated late July and August, six courts indicated a need to replace their case management systems within this fiscal year. 22 courts will need to replace one or more case management systems within the next 1 to 5 years. 16 courts are in discussion with vendors to replace their current case management systems. 35 courts are interested in participating in trial court consortia to collectively negotiate contracts with private case management vendors. 33 courts expressed an interest in AOC implementation assistance with e-business services. 38 courts expressed an interest in the AOC negotiating branch-wide licensing agreements. A majority of the courts believe the Judicial Council should set technology standards for the courts, and courts believe the Judicial Council should determine how the funding of technology projects will be secured. Courts want to be involved in the development of the branch-wide technology strategy, and electronic access, no surprise, electronic access and exchange of information was the service most identified as important to the courts and to stakeholders. So in broad strokes, the combination of the survey results and the input from the technology summit, as well as numerous informal and formal interactions with the courts, including the JCTC's presentation to the PJs last month, demonstrates that the courts are eager to take advantage of e-business practices in order to better serve the public and stakeholders in a budget climate where we are now constrained to 1% local fund balances and 2% branch fund balances. As we learned yesterday, the IMF, the Improvement Fund, is currently funding branch-level support for court technology vital to the trial courts, examples being LANWAN, and this year, the Phoenix Financial. This fund is rapidly being depleted and will zero out in fiscal 14-15. This lack of funding has already impacted those courts faced with failing case management systems, and without fund balances to support projects over and above the day-to-day operations, and Kings will be one of those that we will address this afternoon. At the summit and during a post-summit meetings, the executive branch's court technology agency made it clear there will be no additional funding for technology, including through the budget change proposal process, without addressing technology planning and governance with bottom-up buy-in from the courts. Accordingly, in late December, the JCTC proposed the establishment of the Technology Planning Task Force to focus all in one place technology planning, governance, and funding. The chief appointed the task force's members earlier in this month, and I might say that the formation of this group really is in line with what we've been talking about at RuPro, ENP, and TCTC level in terms of a policy. A number of different commissions, committees, and task forces within the branch have been focusing on these issues, and the idea of this task force is to, first of all, put all of these efforts in one basket. Secondly, give them a drop-dead timeline, a one-year timeline to complete the process with a sunset so that this task force stops in a year unless extended by the Judicial Council. The task force will report directly to JCTC and to the council, and it is charged with accomplishing specific tasks and a very specific charge. Specifically, again, the task force is to work collaboratively with the courts and stakeholders to define judicial branch technology governance in terms of statewide versus local decision-making and funding, to develop a strategic and tactical technology plan across all court levels that provides a vision and direction for technology within the branch, and probably most importantly, to develop recommendations for stable long-term funding sources for supporting branch technology, as well as a delineation of technology funding resources. And one of the BSA criticisms, by the way, regarding branch technology has been lack of stable funding. So stable funding really is critical to this effort. And as part of the effort, the task force will leverage the survey results, the summit output, and the recommendation of the recently completed work streams. The membership of the task force is designed to be broadly representative of branch constituencies. Task force membership includes representation from the trial court presiding judge's advisory committee, the court executive's advisory committee, the trial court budget working group. Three of the members are on the trial court budget working group, the trial court technology initiatives working group, the California Information Technology Managers Forum, the independent CIO group, an independent group of court technology officers, the private sector technology bar, the courts of review. One of the members is the former president of CJA. Any guesses? The Court Technology Advisory Committee and the Judicial Council's Technology Committee. Included in the membership are judges with technology experience, both as chairs of their local technology committees and experience at the branch level, court administrators who have overseen major technology projects, including the Central District's e-filing system, and court information officers with private sector and court project management experience, as well as specific experience in leading technology strategic planning and training. Courts of all sizes are participating, including our largest, Los Angeles, and one of our smallest, Plumas. Members in their representative capacities will be required, and I emphasize that, to seek input and to report back to their constituencies. So essentially, this is a core, agile, and small steering committee that nevertheless will be connected to all the constituencies and stakeholders. We will, of course, consult and seek input as we go along and support from stakeholders inside and outside the branch. The task force held its first teleconference meeting last week, and tomorrow we'll participate in a six-hour face-to-face meeting, probably our only face-to-face because of budget constraints until much later in the process. So just let me finish by stating that our courts are challenged by limited and dwindling funding for technology. The trial courts operate with failing case management systems and with greater than ever need for e-filing, e-business practices, and e-access in order to do more with less and to better serve the public and our branch stakeholders. I think the proof in the pudding is Orange County's experience, where even before a mandatory e-filing, they saved about 20% in staffing and other costs by implementing e-filing in their civil system. We cannot keep up with the caseloads and keep the electronic courthouse doors open without functional case management systems, other technology efficiencies. So this, to some degree, is becoming an access to justice issue. Thank you, Chief. Any questions from anyone, I'd be glad to answer.
Yes, Judge Ellsworth.
Thank you. We have recently found, by going fileless, paperless, a significant savings to Riverside. Does your committee, looking at that, besides the e-filing piece of it, but looking at the ability to share that with other courts and the experience, for example, that Riverside has had, is that something that's on the radar as well?
Absolutely. I think that the e-business practices that Riverside is engaged in, not only e-filing but other e-business practices, are significant examples for the branch at large in terms of how to do more with less, essentially.
Also, your CAO, Sherry Carter, is on our committee.
Very good. Thank you, Judge Kaufman and Judge Ellsworth. I want to point out, well, first I want to thank the chairs of the internal committees and also the reporting judicial council members from the liaison for giving us this executive summary of what's happening in the branch. And I want to point out how always it's astonishing to me how much work is being done behind the scenes by judges and volunteers, in addition to the work that they're doing in their professional lives as lawyers and as judges and as justices. And what you're hearing today and what you're hearing in these executive reports is the tip of the iceberg of all of the work that's being done by so many dedicated people to furthering access to justice and taking on these very discreet but looming large challenges. And when I think about the meetings and the collaboration and the time it takes to bring folks in, I can only say that what I continue to believe, that the branch is truly an amazing institution with this kind of support and this kind of effort, in addition to all that everyone does without pay. Yes. So really, thank you for all you do. And for those who contributed to these reports, too countless to name here, but ongoing, you have the Judicial Council's respect and support. Thank you.